Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Ontex Interim Results Conference Call.
What does that mean?
This call is being recorded. Today's call will be hosted by Jacques Pournaud, Chief Finance Officer. Following the opening comments, an interactive Q&A session will be available. A copy of today's announcement and presentation is available on www.ontexglobal.com. I would like to remind everyone that the safe harbor statements apply to this presentation and the subsequent Q&A session. I would now like to hand the call over to Jacques Pournaud. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. So, good morning, everybody. I'm very pleased to take you through the Ontex Quarter 3 performance. You know, after Quarter 1 and Quarter 2, we now continue delivering a strong set of results. It does illustrate very well our sustainable, profitable growth story, as you will see through the presentation. So I would now ask you to go to the slide number 5 of the presentations for the key highlights. So on this slide 5, what you can see is we made significant progress across all divisions and all categories. That's very important. See, first, we continue operational progress. We posted solid revenue growth in line with our organic model. You remember the 4-6% growth we already highlighted at IPO. And this, for this quarter, is even against a very strong comparable in the third quarter of last year. On EBITDA, we continued the expansion of our EBITDA margin, whilst continuing to invest in future growth. And this is also aligned with what we presented during the IPO and in previous quarters. On a different note, we are very pleased to have fundamentally improved our financial position and optimized our interest costs. You have seen, in fact, it started with the IPO and the redemption of 280 million of floating rate notes in July. Then you have seen that our net debt and leverage decreased at end of September 2014, and this is due to the performance in EBITDA and, as you will see also, strong cash flow. Finally, our strengthened financial position has been recognized by two notch, which is quite exceptional, upgrade from both S&P and Moody's. Recently, you saw that we made and we finalized a successful refinancing of our 630 million of notes. This was thanks to a strong support from the banks and the bond market. Upon completion, we will be able to lock in very attractive terms. As such, our weighted average cost of debt, which was 8.1%, will flow to slightly above 3.5% for the full year 2015. At current 3-month Euribor and current leverage. This will obviously boost cash flow as our interest cost will decrease by 28 million next year. So obviously a key performance. If now we go on the next slide to get into more details. So first start with the growth. The revenue. We posted in quarter three a like-for-like revenue growth of 4.9%. And it's very important to keep in mind that the KC effect had no impact on this growth in this quarter. So it's now fully integrated in our comparables. Next also, that in line with management expectations and against strong comparable in the prior year, we delivered this 4.9, which is right in the middle of our growth model. We tell you it's about growth, our story. It's about profitable growth. Now, looking at the EBITDA, the adjusted EBITDA increased by 8.6% to 49 million, and our adjusted EBITDA margin increased by 41 basis points to 12.3%, which is slightly ahead of our model, which, remind you, was 30 basis points year in, year out of adjusted EBITDA margin increase. This expansion of EBITDA margin comes from the gross margin improvement on the back of top-line growth and ongoing productivity improvements. This top-line growth obviously gives us operating leverage. In quarter three, we had a neutral net currency impact on EBITDA, which is different from previous quarters. Now, looking at cash, we see that the adjusted free cash flow, amounting to 48 million for Q3, has been higher than in previous quarters. We'll be covering this a little bit later with an explanation on the working capital movement. Our net debt, as I said, decreased to 535 million, and our leverage decreased also to 2.8 times, coming from 3 times at IPO. Finally, obviously, as I said, the successful refinancing was agreed with significantly better terms. Now it's maybe time to move to a financial table to get some more details. On this slide eight, you have the key metrics of our P&L. I will obviously only comment some of them. For me, one thing which is important is the picture you can see of the leverage, how we leverage our P&L. You can see that our top line growth of 4.9%, and once again in a competitive environment, delivers 8.4% of adjusted EBIT growth increase. And it's coming from our gross margin increase, you see, 9.3%. This is indeed what I would call a healthy leverage. Regarding the difference between our gross margin 111 basis point increase and the adjusted EBITDA margin increase of 41 basis point, can say the difference between the two is mainly linked to the fact that the gross margin has got a positive FX impact, which is somewhat reversed in the middle of the P&L through a rather technical terms of revaluation of accounts payable, accounts receivable, and also some FX from the hedging. So this is why you have this difference between the two very important gross margin and slightly lower EBITDA margin increase. Very important also to remark that our operating profit, excluding non-recurring, follows our profitability trend, which illustrates that our depreciation is aligned to our normal pattern, and which is also aligned with the guidance we always give of 3% of CapEx going on, and show that our model is stable. Now we can move into top line and giving some more details. First, on the group, you see on slide 9, it's clear that from the top graph, the key driver for our growth is volume. And you see price mix, we have a slight price mix increase, which is mainly compensating for FX. Once again, as we said, this pricing is mainly coming from Middle East, Africa and growth markets, where we are in a rather in a branded type of approach. Now, if you look on the bottom graph, you see that we have posted a seventh quarter of like-for-like growth, with this time what we would call a normalized trend, whereas Q1 and Q2 had been strongly impacted by KC effect. If we now move to the divisions on page 10, what do we see? Mature retail has demonstrated a robust performance, with Q3 2014 sales rising by 4.7% year-on-year on a like-for-like basis. The trend is normalized in the third quarter, with again the impact of the withdrawal of Kimberly-Clark from Western Europe baby diaper market no longer having any impact in the third quarter. Revenue in the UK was slightly lower following strong retailer brand gains since mid-2013, and this obviously still linked to the KC exit. And we estimate that our market share was stable. This UK performance was more than offset by solid growth in other countries through continued collaboration with retailers to promote their own brands. And for example, here we can mention Poland and Australia, but also Spain. If we move to the growth market division, it continued to post strong double-digit growth, with Q3 2014 revenue up 19% on a like-for-like basis. The performance continued to be led by Russia, which represents the largest share of the division, despite macro volatility in the region. We also see significant demand from national accounts for retailer brands. One thing, obviously, when you talk growth markets, you also have to keep in mind currency. And our reported revenue was impacted by the depreciation of the Russian ruble. That's it for gross market. Now, if we look at Middle East Africa division, you know it grows traditionally slower in the third quarter. It's linked to the fact it's summertime, so very hot temperature, and also to the Ramadan. And we see it each and every year. Despite that, we had a like-for-like sales up by 6.6%. And this divisional growth was helped mainly by further revenue increase in Turkey, and also Morocco and Pakistan continuing to present encouraging performances, benefiting from successful market penetration. On the other hand, several other countries in Middle East Africa region experience challenging political and economic environments, as you know. And it has obviously led to lower revenue on a year-on-year basis. Here to the reported revenue continued to be impacted by the FX conditions, but to a smaller extent than in the prior two quarters. Now, moving to healthcare, following a solid performance in quarter two, healthcare revenue division increased their revenue up by 1.6% on a like-for-like basis in quarter three, and this in line with estimated market growth. The division benefited from good performance in the home delivery channels in both the UK and Italy, while revenue in Germany was lower due to scaling back of certain customer contracts. mostly as we are not willing to accept prices which erode our margins. On the other hand, Serenity, our acquisition, continued to perform well and completely in line with our expectations. Very pleased with this acquisition. If we move to now categories and the view on categories, what can we say? It's slide 11. The category perspective, and that's important for us, confirms that we are positioned in attractive and resilient categories with like-for-like growth across the board. First, the revenue for baby care, quarter three, increased by 4.6% in like-for-like. And we have to keep in mind that this growth is on the back of an increase of 14.6% in quarter three 2013. And it does reinforce our strategy of partnering with retailers to position their own brand a smart choice alternative to A brands. One other point in the baby care is we are pursuing innovation and we are continuing the rollout of Supercore 2 to new customers across Western Europe. On Adulting Co., sales were encouraging in quarter 3 2014 with a revenue up 4.3% on a like-for-like basis and with growth in both the retail and institutional channels. We must say that in particular the performance was very strong in Adulting Co. in mature market retail, where sales were up 14% in the quarter. As you can see, the sales of fem care products rose 1.5% on a like-for-like basis in quarter three, following higher growth in the prior two quarters and following more than 13% growth in quarter three of last year, and it was at the time through contract wins. On fem care, we can see that looking ahead, innovation is anticipated to support further growth in the coming quarters. And we also want to point out that probably it was not a top of the list of our priorities, and we are now refocusing on fem care. So now, we have talked a lot about top line. Let's come back to profitability and move on slide 12. If we look at the main drivers behind our margin expansion, we can see the following. First of all, obviously, we have a strong top line like-for-like growth, which per se is creating operating leverage. Secondly, contrary to other years, we had limited forex impact or net forex impact on EBITDA. Third, and this is even more visible at the gross margin level, we have continued to work on driving efficiencies and productivity improvements. Raw material prices, they rose slightly in the quarter, but we were able once again to mitigate part of these increases through hedging, supplier negotiation, and other efficiency initiatives. Finally, our operating expenses remain broadly stable, measured in percentage of sales, as this enables us to continue invest in the growth of the business. All of this delivers EBITDA margin expansion ahead of our model of 30 basis points a year. Now moving to cash flow. Cash flow, slide 13. We have seen a noticeable improvement in cash flow generation in the period. And this mostly is driven by two factors. First, the general improvement in adjusted EBITDA, and second, a lower working capital consumption. It's probably worth digging a little bit in working capital. You remember that in previous quarters we explained we had incurred higher VAT receivables in Italy in the first two quarters. This was one of the reasons for greater working capital consumption in the first half of the year. This has now been stabilized, as we said, since August, so we see a much lessened impact of that in this quarter. If we look on our trade receivable, they basically grow and evolve in line with our activity, which is also very much in line with our expectations. On the other hand, you can see an increase of our trade payables. On this one, you have to keep in mind that this is always a snapshot of our position at closing periods. Given the timing of the quarter end and our weekly payment cycle, our accounts payable figures can be impacted. On the inventory side, the figure has been influenced by some building of stock ahead of anticipated promotional activity in the next quarter. More generally, we stick with our ongoing ambitions of keeping working capital to 12% of sales. So this is again one of the elements we shared at IPO and which we are reconfirming. The rest of the cash flow drivers are in line with expectation, and the CapEx spend is on track. Also, regarding CapEx, we reiterate our guidance of roughly 3% of sales in CapEx spend. So, there again, nothing's changed. One of the elements which will come also, but more in the non-recurring, will be the amortization of, and we'll come back to that in when we talk about refinancing, of the cost linked to our previous bonds we have reimbursed, and which we need to for which we need to have an accelerated depreciation. Moving now on slide 15, we'll give you some input on the refinancing. So, as you have heard, probably, we have completed a comprehensive refinancing package about 2 weeks ago. You have all the elements on the slide 15, and I will mainly outline the rationale behind this refinancing and also give some words about our new funding profile. We have always said that we were looking to refinance within the next 12 months. And in addition to this, we wanted to leverage current favorable market conditions and that in order to secure an increased financial flexibility. We wanted also to lock in preferable interest rates for the next 5 to 7 years. And this is probably a little bit less important, but we also wanted to leverage the documentation that was already in place for the IPO to expedite the process. As you can see on this slide, we have been able to complete the refinancing at much improved condition. We have been able to extend our maturities further and also to diversify our funding profile because now we are not only bond related but we have also Term Loan A funded. So if you look on the right side of the slide, what you can see, we have now for 250 million of senior secured notes, 7-year tenor. The issue price was 100% and the coupon is 4.75%. When you look at the RCF, we have been able to upsize it from 75 to 100 million, which gives us more flexibility. Also, five-year tenor agreement and same rate as the Term Loan A. Finally, the Term Loan A for an amount of 380 million with a five-year tenor and interest rate based on the three-month Euribor plus a starting margin of 275 basis points, and is largely hedged already now. All of this gives improved conditions and attractive pricing with, and it's to come back to that, a weighted average cost of interest down from 8.1% to slightly above 3.5%, which is creating a 20 million decrease of interest cost for next year. Now, moving on slide 16. The slide 16 shows you the classical sources and use of funds. It's the same as what was presented in the offering memorandum. There is not much to say on it. It's clear. The proceeds from the new debt are being used to repay the two old outstanding notes. Then we have, as you can see, a prepayment premium of almost 33 million and transaction cost of 12.5 million, which will both be paid thanks to the cash we have on the balance sheet. It's going to happen during quarter four of this year, obviously. Now some more words about our capital structure and our liquidity on slide 17. This slide is obviously a pre-refinancing slide, and it shows that already before this refinancing, we had achieved a much stronger financial profile. You see our net debt of 535, you see the leverage of 2.8, and you see the available liquidity of 186 million at end of September, which is, for us, really a good position. Important also to keep in mind that both Moody's and S&P have upgraded us, which gives us also a much better financial profile and risk profile. Finally now, and in the figures, I'd like to move to the non-recurring cost. I'm very pleased to say that if you put aside the IPO costs and you look at the first nine months of the year, these non-recurring costs were very limited. Important to share with you that in quarter four, we expect obviously additional non-recurring coming from the refinancing. As you can see on the last sentence of this slide, what do we expect linked to this refinancing? We expect in quarter four, not linked to this first nine months. We expect to have, as I say, the 33 million of the make-whole cost linked to the refinancing. They will be reported as non-recurring on P&L. We will also have, as non-recurring on the P&L, the accelerated depreciation of the previous bond costs, which I already alluded to in previous slides. Next to this, if you look at our IPO cost, and as a reminder, I'd like for you to, maybe for the modeling and so on, to remind you that the total of IPO cost of 46.5 million has in fact been splitted between 25.4 put on the balance sheet and 21.1 in the P&L, as you can see, under IPO costs, 21.1 for the first 9 months of the year. Basically, with this, I'd like to move to the last slide, with slide 20, which is the outlook slide. Starting with from two key elements in what we call strategic progress. Once again, we completed a comprehensive refinancing package for the two outstanding notes at significantly better terms. Second, we confirm Ontex growth model of increasing the top line organically by 4%-6% a year. As you have seen, we also confirm the increased EBITDA margin by 30 basis points a year. Obviously, you have seen this year, we are a little bit ahead of our model. Giving some elements about outlook. On the raw material price, we expect to see a slight rise in quarter four 2014 compared to the prior quarter. One of the questions you could have is what's happening with the oil-based raw material or oil-linked raw materials. If we look at indices, we see that they are starting to slightly decrease, but we have not seen impact yet in our P&L. Plus, as you remember, we have in our contracts a lag agreement, which means that the decrease you see now will only impact our P&L in quarter one 2015. It's the mechanism we always explained. On top of this, obviously, for the other raw materials which could increase, we continue all the initiatives we have, what we call mitigating initiatives, with efficiency programs and hedging. Final outlook expectations is about CapEx, as we reconfirm 3% of sales, and you know it has been this year weighted more towards the second half of the year, because first half we were below our trends, and we are now catching up as our programs were more, let's say, organized towards year-end. This closes for me the presentation around this quarter three financial performance. Again, we are very pleased with this very strong set of results, and now we're ready to take your questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question at this time, please press the star or asterisk key followed by the digit one on your telephone. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you find that your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star two. Again, please press star one to ask a question. We will pause for a moment to allow everyone to signal. We will now take our first question from Alan van den Berg of KBC.
Yes, good morning, Jacques. This is Alan from KBC Securities. I have a couple of questions. The first would be around Procter & Gamble, which has entered the incontinence market over the last couple of months. Have you a better view on what their intentions are in the market? Meaning, where do you see any form of overlap in terms of products or regions with your business? Also, have you heard anything about their intention to expand outside the retail segment? In your press release, you also mentioned that in the U.K. you have seen slightly lower growth. Do we have to link this with Procter & Gamble's entry in the U.K. market? That's the first part, and then I have another question regarding your performance in fem care. You have reported a like-for-like growth of 1.5%. I know that some of your customers, or one in particular, has reported a much stronger growth in fem care. Have you any idea what could be the difference between these two growth profiles? Thank you.
So, thank you, Alan. Starting with P&G, so maybe to position it a little bit, P&G is entering in the light income market and for women. So if you look at our turnover, you will see that for us, the adult income is basically 35% of our business, of which 25% go through the institutional channels. And you know P&G is not there. So we have 10% left. Out of these 10%, part is sold in Western Europe and part is sold in Middle East, Africa and growth markets. So here again, we need to concentrate only on Western Europe. Next to that, you look and you say in Western Europe, there are several markets and P&G is mainly in UK and France. So it does reduce again the overlap. Next to that, you realize that we are both in adult, in heavy inco and in light inco, and P&G is only in light inco, which does reduce again the potential overlap. Then you go to male and women, so P&G is in light inco women, which does again reduce the potential overlap. And finally, you look at the way they position their product as premium product, even higher than Tena, and so do not really tackle the retail brand segment. So I think it's just to demonstrate that the overlap, if we make a rough cut, could be in the 1%, 1 to 3% max. So that's really not, for us, a big overlap, a big risk. Now, again, what we see is that they are very dynamic in terms of the introduction with sampling, classical approach. They do a great above-the-line advertising, so as usual for P&G, so very professional. So potentially it could, and we hear that it could help a little bit the category. We obviously would be pleased if we could increase the size of the pie for everybody. But we are still a little bit skeptical because if you are in, you have incontinence problem, normally it's not an advertising which is going to change the issue. Also, one of the elements we understand from what we get from the external market is that there is anyway within the P&G range a kind of cannibalization between Always Discreet and the Always Classic. So, but it's not so much our issue; it's more theirs. On P&G, I think it's more or less it. The lower growth in UK, is it linked to that? No, it's not. In fact, what we have shown, then we were talking about retail in UK. We have, as a reminder, as I said, we see the growth now of our growth in UK on the back of very strong first quarters. Very high comparable, so that's something which plays a lot, and generally the market in UK has been softer, and we have maintained our market share. And as you remember, our market share is very high, so it's not an obvious one to maintain. If we talk about the fem care and the fact it's lower than competition, what you heard from competition, As I said in the presentation, we see femcare as an increased point of focus for our company. You know, in every company you put priorities, and it comes back on the top of the pile with innovations which I cannot share the detail because, I mean, it's very commercially sensitive information, as you can imagine. But we have innovation and a renewed attention. By the way, also, the performance in femcare is completely in line with what we were expecting, so we're not at all surprised. And it was factored into when we said our growth model 4-6 and being in, this was part of it. So more to come on femcare.
Okay, clear. Thank you.
Thank you.
We will now take our next question from Kartik Swaminathan of Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Thank you very much for taking my questions. The first two were on raw materials. First of all, could you please remind us when your fluff pulp contracts come up for renewal with respect to the hedging that you have in place? And then the second question was on exactly which oil-based polymer raw materials are going to be benefiting from falling oil prices. So is that everything from superabsorbents, non-woven, and LDPE, or are there only two of the three?
Okay. So, fluff contracts, I would say this is an ongoing process. So there is not a one moment where everything is, up for renewal and we start from a blank sheet of paper. And this is something important as a general message. When we say we have a rolling process of, let's say, mitigation, this is valid across the board. This is valid for our FX on the currencies, and it's valid on the material. So we are across the year, we are in permanent discussions with could be banks to have financial instruments of hedging and reviewing them and improving them, and also with our suppliers. And the dialogue we have with suppliers is not only about price, by the way, it's about innovation and all the other aspects, which means it's a real partnership. So there is no... So that's why, as we said, we have already part of next year is already covered, because it's this rolling process. On the oil-linked, let's say, type of raw material, superabsorbent, PE and non-woven, are impacted by the decrease in oil price, and we see on all three a slight, decrease of the indices. It's always a little bit the same story, is when you go to the pump to buy some gas or oil for your car, some fuel for your car, and you have seen a price increase has been explained in the newspapers, you immediately see the price increase. When the newspapers say that it's going to be a price decrease, you go to the pump to get your fuel and you will say, where is this price decrease? It seems to be some loss in the chain. But being serious, we have seen the oil price going down and now only the indices are reacting, and the three of them, which, as I said, will impact us more towards quarter one next year, and due again to our lag system. Obviously, this all is rather minimal. We don't expect big fluctuation.
Okay, thank you very much.
We will now take our next question from Eva Quiroga of UBS. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Could I come back to your comments on the growth in Inco outside the healthcare channel? Can you maybe talk a little bit about what's been behind this very strong growth in retail? And then secondly, given that it's almost the end of November, can you talk a little bit about momentum you've seen since the end of the quarter, especially in Russia, which has been a very strong growing market for you? Thanks very much.
Thank you, Eva. So the growth in Inco in retail, we obviously see a very high growth, as I said, 14%. And there, what do we see? I would say it's no magic. It's a little bit our in retail. You know, we are a retailer brand, and we are benefiting for the we're benefiting there also for the our strong position in retailer brand in general and the relationship we have built with the retailers, which has allowed us obviously to have more contract gain than losses, let's say. So we are there completely leveraging our privileged relationship and partnership with retailers, thanks to our big position in retail brands. That's really from there. Talking about Russia, we see effectively this year a very good performance, even more than good, an amazing performance from Russia. It's not only Russia, by the way, also Ukraine is also doing very well. And we do not see impact about any sanction. Maybe to reassure those of you who could have questions about that, we in Russia, we produce part of our goods there, so in the country. Second, as the fact we are also rather small still in a big market, we are what I call growing under the radar, and with a huge potential, obviously. We do not see impact on the political situation. And also something very important is what we call the people. And sometimes you try to find in a company performance the impact of external factors, but should not forget the internal factors. And the fact we have changed the team in Russia beginning of this year, we have very much reinforced that team, very strong leaders over there, which are, again, leading not only Russia, but the business in Ukraine. And we have seen a striking improvement over there.
So. Can I just come back to the Inco category for a second? And you've obviously talked about the contracts in Germany. Do you see any easing there? And is that a situation that could spread to other markets? Or are the price pressures from the customers particularly pronounced in Germany at the moment?
You say in Germany, price pressure in Germany.
Well, because you said you wouldn't take on contracts that would be loss-making for you.
Yeah, but it's in healthcare, sorry. It's
yes,
not in retail. It's okay, in healthcare, I mean, it's not across the board, but, you know, in some cases we have had discussion with a customer, and we have not been able to align on the price. And this brings us back to what we have explained, you remember, the whole story about KC, which was obviously in retail, but it's just to show the what we have in mind, which is growth, but profitable growth, so not ready to sacrifice margins. When KC started some years ago to get into the, they wanted to get into retailer brand, and they started to offer a little bit crazy prices, we choose not to follow, because we didn't want to start this, let's say, negative spiral of having decreasing prices. So here again is the same story. In one special case, we have not followed. Obviously, this should not remove the question, which is a general question on healthcare, about the fact the market is quite competitive as government wants to cut their budget, so decrease their budget. So obviously there is a general pressure on price across the board, not especially in Germany. And there we are, what we're doing, smart redesign of our products in the line of the standards we are, let's say, competing in. And we are introducing some innovations which allow us to reduce our cost. But again, this the general, let's say, trend in healthcare, and in Germany it was just a one-off contract. So nothing very specific, not a trend, let's say.
Thank you very much.
Welcome.
We will now take our next question from Fernand de Boer of Petercam. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. It's Fernand Boer, Petercam. Thank you for taking my questions. A few. One, did you do any additional factoring in this quarter? Second question is on the other expense line, which was 2.1 million. I think you mentioned something in your conference call, but could you give some clarification here? And on the commodities of raw materials impact for next year, you said, okay, maybe a little bit lower. Thanks to lower prices. From the other hand, the dollar exchange rate is moving up. So that's probably going to have a negative impact next year if you're hedging expires. Could you give some indication there? And the last one, coming back on healthcare, you said, okay, you lost one contract with depressed growth in this quarter. Did you have some offsetting gains which we could see in the coming quarter, so a little bit better growth there?
Sorry, could you repeat the last question? I didn't get in which markets you were.
You in healthcare, you lost a contract in Germany, but are there any offsetting contracts coming in that growth improves somewhat in the coming quarters?
Okay, get it. So, starting with the factoring. Factoring was stable in quarter three at 155 million. And there we just had a reshuffle between our Italian factoring, which decreased slightly, and our BNP contract, which increased slightly. But the total stayed the same at 155. So if we now go to, you said, on the other expense line. So on this line, there is a little bit of mixed bag, as you know, when you put others. And this mixed bag is mainly impacted this quarter by FX, FX effect. And how is it? We are, at each end period, we are doing a revaluation of our accounts receivable, accounts payable, inventories across the different affiliates. And this has then an impact depending on the currency movement across the period, and that's what you find there. On this line, you also find the impact of the hedging contracts. And as you know, in hedging contracts, if you hedge you are... I would say protecting yourself against a downward trend, but you are also, losing any upward trend. And as I said, we had a positive impact in gross margin due to currencies, which we are unfortunately losing through hedging impact on lower in the P&L. so at least partly losing, not fully, but partly losing. So this is all these effects which are in this line. And in order not to get into too technical discussion now, I would say that if you want to go further, we could do it offline, and you could contact us. So, one other question was the commodity impact for next year. In fact, we didn't give you an outlook for the full year. We see, as we said, we see in the quarter one, as we see now, a decrease of oil-linked materials, raw materials, in line with the decrease of indices. This obviously could change if the oil would go up. What we do is, and you were talking about US dollar, we are hedging ourselves against US dollar, and we do it as for any other currency on a rolling forward basis. Obviously, at the moment, we have to hedge at a higher level because that's the name of the game. So, again, we see also, and let's not forget that, and that's the whole game on FX. We have an impact of US dollar on our purchases. We have on the other side, when the euro does depreciate, we have a positive impact on all our top line and sales, for example, in GB. Then when we're talking about, the price of raw materials, let's not forget that the base component is only one element of the cost of these raw materials. Other key elements which can intervene are the capacity on the market and all the evolution of the transformation cost. So it's also other elements which are not makes that it's not necessarily linked to an index. Then talking about, I think the last one was about on healthcare in Germany. Maybe a misunderstanding, because we did not lose a full contract. We only choose on part of a contract not to follow. And we were asking if there are any offsetting gains. And here again, we do not comment on a case-by-case basis. But you have to know that almost day in, day out, we gain or lose on contract. This is exactly the business, the day-to-day business. And when we say contracts, again, we're not talking about a contract for one supplier for potentially all the countries and all the categories, or within a category for all the sub-elements of the category. So these are often discussion around one part of a category. So here, no, we're not worried to say it. The short answer is we're not worried by this German story.
Okay, thank you very much.
Welcome.
We will now take a question from Celine Panutti of JP Morgan.
Yes.
Good morning, Jack.
Morning.
I have a few questions. If we start with the refinancing that you did, clearly you are incurring very high cost to call these bonds ahead of April 15. So I was just wondering why that was the case. Why we are seeing a 2 million extra net financial cost in the third quarter versus previous quarter, And maybe to finish off on that, so what should be the cost? Because you put an adjusted cash flow number on the slide. So what are the other cash impacts that we should be? So what are all the cash impacts that we should be aware of in for Q4 in terms of the cost? You mentioned the P&L ones. I just wanted to understand the cash impact. That's my first question. Second question on the top line performance. Clearly, your comps are easier in the fourth quarter. So I was wondering whether we should expect that growth could be above what you deliver in Q3. And also, can you comment on what is this promotion for which you have higher inventory? What is it something that could have an impact in terms of the top line and the margin in the fourth quarter? My third question is on the SG&A costs. If I look at the different parts of the cost base on an absolute level, we have seen that distribution costs and sales and marketing, as well as general administration, are more or less all in absolute in line with previous quarters. At the time of the IPO, you flagged that this should go up because you are recruiting people and you're beefing up your SG&A. So I was wondering whether it's just a timing issue here. Thank you.
So lots of questions. I'm going to go rather fast because we are under timing pressure. So refinancing first is, I would say, very important, and it's true there are costs, but there are huge benefits. Also, one of the elements when we mention here the cost, the make-whole cost, we have also in front of this make-whole cost, and the fact we did it earlier, the benefit of the interest cost, which are lower already in 2014. So when we offset all these elements, that gets to a much, much lower figure, which is, let's say, and when you compare that figure of going earlier, and you see it's a 5 months, let's say, return type of payback type of operations. So it's so that's why we did it, basically. And you see that thanks to that, we have been able to move our weighted average cost of debt from 8% to 3.5, which is quite remarkable, and delivers 28.6 million of savings in interest ongoing. So, which is again, I think that's why we are so pleased about this refinancing, in fact. And by the way, we were helped by the banks, and the bonds market was very open to us on that one, very encouraging. So we were oversubscribed by so many times. So it's a great thing.
Maybe we can take this later, but you basically saving 28 million versus paying 33 million when you could have not paid as much penalty by waiting. So that's maybe the calculation I would like to discuss, but we can take this offline.
Sure. Let's take that offline because it's we have locked. Keep in mind we have locked great conditions. And removed all the risk from our P&L, which is great. Also, we have hedged our interest rate. So that's one question. I'm trying to remember what was the second question.
Then net financial being higher in the third quarter.
Yeah. In fact, this is the amortization of, you remember, we had in the previous bonds, we had a redemption of 218 million of bonds after with the primary of the IPO. You see that we use primary to do that. And linked to these bonds, there were some borrowing expenses on the balance sheet, and we needed now to do an accelerated depreciation. So that's what you find there.
And how long will that be for?
I mean, it's done. It's a one-off because it's an accelerated one-off depreciation. Yeah.
Okay.
So then you were talking about the cash aspect. I think on cash aspect in quarter four, what we will have is we're going to pay the make-whole cost of 33 million, and we're going to pay the transaction cost of 12.5 million, which is 45 million. The quarter four, all of these, we say that we are now, we came back in a normal model, normalized growth, which is between 4 and 6, and we see it continuing. Obviously, for the year 2014 in total, making the weighted average between the various growths we already got, gives us for the full year more than the model, but it's just mathematical. SG&A cost, absolute level, distribution cost. On this one, we can talk about more about timing. We would expect a slight increase in next year over time. We expect a slight increase. But again, we always said, and it's very important, that we are very cost conscious. So we do it step by step in a very efficient way. So that's, but we continue building up our structure, and not only our structure in marketing and sales, but our structure in the divisions to support the growth. And that's exactly in line with our story. Sustainable, and you know, we say about sustainable, profitable growth. This is the sustainability part of it. So I really need now to thank you all for attending the call, and see you and talk to you potentially a little bit later, and also when we come with our full year results. You can always obviously contact our IR, Philip Ludwig. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. This concludes Ontex Interim Results Conference Call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.